Good evening, everybody, and you're very welcome to another edition of The Friday Show with myself, Ray Hull.
And myself, Paul Cotty.
And me, Tom Ryan, here in Tipperary.
Oh, we have another Tipperary. We had a Cork man on last week. We have a Tipperary man on this week. But now I know you are going to enjoy this man. This man has been going, he gives little talks around the country about sovereignty and stuff like that. And we're always delighted to have Tom Ryan on our show tonight. Knowledge and honesty, it's in bucketfuls here. Tom is from Total Mind Dynamics. And I believe you're a hypnotist and a healer and things like that, Tom, as well, yeah?
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff I do on a daily basis. Keeps the devil away from the door.
And sure, isn't it great to have it. But tonight you came on, look at, and I know you to give and I'll talk about the licenses around the country and that. And we're going to get you to talk about licenses there for a little minute, because we're going to lead to something else that I know you had an interest and you rang us when we came out of it this morning, right? So if you just have a little chat there about the licenses, and then that'll lead us into some other little bit of a chat that we want to have about a court case that took place this morning.
Cool, yeah. Well, down in Cork about, I think it was about 2 years ago, a man went into court to pay his fine. And he says, I have the money here. There's little hatches that you go in and you look in and they look out at you.
Yeah.
Like a confession box almost. And he says, I've come to pay my fine. But before I pay my fine, may I ask you a question? The lady says, of course. Now, before I pay you, I've got to know for sure that everything is legal and above board. So could you please show me your bona fide license for collecting money?
Right.
And the conversation went on, and then the supervisor was brought, and then the manager was brought, and they were given all kinds of subterfuge, but there was no sign of the license. He said, look, I can't pay the fine unless you show me the license, because it wouldn't be appropriate. It wouldn't be right. Well, as far as I know, from that day to this, he's never been paid that license, and they've never come back to him for any money.
No, they generally don't, Paul. You've done that as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I've done that enough times. I go in and ask them before I pay any money, hand it over, any money's over. So just document to verify a legal, valid, bona fide license for operating, because if not, it's deception, and I don't want to be here on deception. I'm here on goodwill to pay the fine.
If you have a license. Beautiful,
elegantly spoken.
If you have a license, that's...
Again, Tom, most people hear us talking about this legal, valid, bona fide license. And if you go onto the internet to try and check out, if you type in the internet, what is a legal, valid, bona fide license, it won't give you the true understanding of it.
You bet it doesn't, because they wouldn't be able to collect their revenue if the truth was told.
So if you want to break it down and explain, what is a legal, valid, bona fide license?
Right, well, look, is it me or Tom you want to do that?
Tom, though.
Well, I think Ray would do it better, but my understanding of it is that it comes from a source that has the authority to issue a license. And as far as I'm concerned, the only one that has authority to issue a license in Ireland are the people operating under the only constitution, which was put in by the people of the 32 counties, and that's the 1919 constitution. And the holders of that constitution, and the holders of the bona fide of that, would be the only people that would be able to give a license. And the state is not part of that. They run under this 1937 subterfuge of a constitution, and they have no authority to give anybody a license, and they can't, and they don't. And anything that passes for a license isn't actually a license at all.
It's a permit.
Exactly. So your TV license, your dog license, all the rest are just permits. They're not licenses. Your driving license is another. It's a permit to drive. It's not a license.
But the way I say it is, the way you... Give me your breakdown. I asked the question. I'm not going to answer it.
Well, look at a license. Yeah, look at a license must come from an authority, and an authority is something that has the vested interest of the people and has the will of the people there. Now, we all, there's only one legal, valid, bona fide constitution in this country, and there's only one legal, valid, bona fide state. And that is the one that was founded in 1919 on the 21st of January. No other state was ever founded in this country. No other state. Never, ever. Right? So, basically, it is only that state that can issue the license, and it must be bona fide means authentic. Yeah, it's from the real source. When you get one from the provisional government, you go down the licensing committee. Even your passport is not authentic. Yeah, because it doesn't have the sovereign seal of the sovereign Dáil Éireann government, of the seal of the people, and that's why you, all businesses, because they're businesses, they need a license to operate. That's basically where it is. All businesses need a license to operate in the Sovereign Republic of Éire or in any sovereign state, because they're a dead entity.
The funny thing about that is the court service pretends to be a proper entity of the state, but they don't even have a permit, ever mind a license. They've got nothing. They've no authority whatsoever from anybody under any circumstances to collect money. Once challenged, they just simply can't collect the money.
Yeah, but they do. They do issue. They still carry on and they issue pieces of paper and things like that. Paul, you probably want to come back on the license, do you?
No. It's a grand, just on the explanation. Explanation. I was waiting for you to hit on. We all understand what the legal part of it is. Bona fide is to, is acting in good faith, honesty, yeah, which brings it back into lawful. So it is legal. Valid is within the date.
Yeah. Bona fide is authentic.
Sorry?
Bona fide is authentic.
Authentic.
And verifiable.
And therefore, the goodwill and stuff like that. So legal, valid, bona fide license, when you put that all together, to operate, means it's got to do with lawful. It's bringing it back. And have you got a lawful license from a lawful government to operate?
I think when we say that thing, and I was thinking about it today, after I heard something, that maybe the question should be, have you got a legal, valid, bona fide license to operate under Dáil Éireann?
That they do not have in the court system, because the court system is under the bar, British Accredited Registry.
Yeah. And they can't have it up in the Royal Oireachtas, because that's not Dáil Éireann. They actually passed some legislation that they would be known as if they were Dáil Éireann, but they're not Dáil Éireann. Dáil Éireann only sat in the Mansion House.
True, absolutely. Well, see, they're acting a part, and they're pretending. It's acting and pretending. Shakespeare said, all the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances, and then one man in each time plays many parts. So when you go into court, you're going into a theatre. They're all playing different acting roles. Some dress up in robes like Dracula, and they wear roadkill in their heads. And you either write your own script, or you're going to get shafted by those.
I'm just laughing with roadkill. Every time you say people say they have the rugs on their heads, I always think of one particular judge. So, and he looked absolutely ridiculous with his rug on him. So, look, at every time somebody says it reminds me of it, I think about it. We were talking about licenses there and authentic. Now, we were at a court case this morning in Drogheda, where a man is asking to have his case heard under the 1919 Sovereign Constitution, as is his right. And there were shenanigans all around the place. Maybe you want to explain it a little bit, Paul. You were there too, and you had a good view of everything that went on.
Basically, what the judge done, he called out the man's name, Mr. What were we going to say? The papers had it and all that. They called out a fictional name to us. It was Mr. Paul Coddington. The man got up and said, I present the man here now that stands in front of you. He went over to the guard to give the guard, Angara Síochána, paperwork. The Angara Síochána was shifting from left to right, from right to left. Each side, the man put the paper to the garda. He twist the other way. While he was twisting, they tried to continue on with the case, saying, the man has been served with two charges and we want this case sent forward for hearing in September, or something like that, I think it was. While they were saying that to the judge and they were having that chat, the garda kept twisting around different sides. Eventually, someone said to the guy, or someone standing at the wall, I think it was some man anyway, he turned around and says, there's something there. And when the guy was turned around, he ended up having to take it. He goes, what's this? And he took it. Now, he's been issued the same thing every time. The last 9 times this case has gone on, he's been issued it. So it's quite well what it is. Then the man went up to the front bar of the stables of the court there, up to the gallows. And we were standing at the bar anyway, and the district court clerk wouldn't take the paperwork. George was trying to tell the man it's sent forward to September. The man was still standing there and says, well, I'm here now. May I remind the court that you sit under the sovereign seal of the sovereign doll Aaron Court. So you do. Sorry for this. You sit under the sovereign seal of the sovereign doll Aaron Court. And then he went on to read, I, Paul Coddington, want this case here under the 1919 Constitution. As is my right, same above. Can the court document and verify a legal valid bona fide license to operate for the sovereign seal of the sovereign Dáil Éireann Court that sits over your head? At which time another man, supposedly dressed as a Garda, came up to the man and got him by the shoulder and says, come on, Paul, let's go now. And Paul turned around and said, I will take my leave under the rest, so I will, and I will return, I will make a return, providing that the court can document and verify a legal valid bona fide license to operate.
So you were writing your own script. You weren't working according to their script. And then they got confused and couldn't handle the situation because they want to be the script writers, they want to be the directors, the prosecutors, and eventually the executors.
Yeah. Without the man having any, without the man having any say whatsoever.
They want to use the authentic emblems of the state as well when they don't have a license to use them. They don't have permission,
They don't. And they don't even request permission.
Yeah, well, they don't have permission. You see, the BAR courts, if you want to go back and you want to read the other de facto constitution, the plebiscite one, I call it. Yeah. The one that's built on sand, the dictator's constitution, or what I often call it is the private agreement between the Free State and the Crown, right, constitution.
Without getting lost on things there as well, there's a few things important about the case, that case as well. They were in that much of a hurry to say what they wanted to say without the man having anything to say. They even forgot to tell him that he was on continuous bail.
Well, then he's not on continuous bail because they have bypassed it themselves without realizing it.
It'll be interesting to see now. Look at the where that one goes. But even under their 19, look, there is no place. The bar is not is not mentioned anywhere in up until 1937. So how are they there? Yeah, they've been there since 1922. How are they there? How did they get there? How did the English courts get to sit in Ireland and preside over the people? Ask yourselves that, people, out there in the stream. And I know there's lots and lots and lots of you listening to the stream tonight. So, because we've been getting good wishes all day long and things like that. And I know there's a lot of people in stream tonight. So welcome to all yous and welcome to all the regulars that we have there in the chat box as well. But I want you to start thinking and think outside the box. How is a British accredited registry, if it's Dáil Éireann that sits in Leinster House, how is a British accredited registry court the highest court in the land here? That you have to ask that question. If that's really Dáil Éireann that sits up there in Leinster House, because the reason that the British accredited registry court is in this country is because that's not Dáil Éireann. That is a provisional temporary government installed by King George V on the 6th of December 1921 in a 26 county free state southern part of the country and a 6 county orange free state in the northern counties. And no state was ever founded in 1921. You just split the one that was founded in 1919 by the wish and will of the people on the 21st of January.
So we end up with a subterfuge with two states.
Yeah, with the British Crown Court sitting at the top of one of them.
At the top of both of them?
Well, how do you prove to people, because most people going into these courts still don't have an understanding, it's always for us to say this, I know we talk about it on the radio, we also go off and read up on the stuff and learn about it, we learn from others. But most people out there going into the courts do not have this understanding that we have of Crown Registered Bar Courts and stuff like that. So what is the solution? How do we get them to have that understanding? Now, I know one of the solutions is what the man is doing in the daughter courts, as in the 1919 Constitution. Basically, that's asking them straight. Is it is this a sovereign daughter in court, or is it a Crown Registered Bar Court, private Crown Registered Bar Court? They don't report on it. The media don't report on it. Now, it's not just happening in Drogheda. It's happening around Ireland, where man and woman's going in there asking these questions. But it needs to get out there to everyone else.
Yeah. And that is, if you want to know whether it's a Dáil Éireann court or if it's a British accredited registry Crown Court, ask. That's the easy way to find out.
There's a lot of things. I just say, look, sometimes not getting an answer can be the answer, you see.
Yeah.
And if you come into my shop and you're blind, it was a sweet shop, and you asked me for a pint of Guinness, and I says, no, can't serve you that. And you said, is this a bar or is it a shop? And I just say, it's a sweet shop. End of, you know.
Yeah, so it qualifies what it is, and you know where you are.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, the assumption and presumption, should I say, of one might be blind is the reason why one asks the questions.
Mm. Well, a friend of mine went into court recently, and he had a solicitor and a barrister. I won't go into who he was or why. But he told him he wanted to, he told him to ask the judge to hear this under the 1919 Constitution, and they said, we can't. And he said, why? He says, the judge would hold us in contempt if we ask that question. Now, what I understand from that is, it is in contempt of the Bar Association, but it's not in contempt of Irish or natural law or of the 1919 Constitution. However, the barrister and the solicitor are sworn officers of the court. They're sworn officers of the Crown Court, so they can't ask that question. So when a person submits to being represented by those kind of people, they're putting themselves in serious danger. It's very, very important. A person should learn to defend themselves.
That's extremely important. How can somebody else think for you? They can't, unless they're doing all sorts of pleading or begging or something like that. So maybe somebody else can beg on your behalf. Oh, please don't send them to jail. He's a nice man. He has 10 kids. He's unemployed. He didn't mean to rob that bank. You know, that's pleading. Yeah, but like a man that talks for himself. Yeah.
He talks up front. He's not pleading. Yes.
Yeah, a man that talks. You never plead in a court. You never. How do you plead? There's no plea.
Yeah. Once you plead, you're putting yourself under their power, and they can now do what they like.
Once you plead, you're saying there's something to answer to.
You're also saying they're superior to you.
To plead guilty means I'll make amends. To plead not guilty means I'm not willing to make amends. That's all it means. Doesn't mean they're not guilty still. Just means I'm not willing to make amends. Once you go in there, you're guilty.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. We're not going to get into and get you, because it'll only confuse the issue. But people need to read the pieces of paper that have been sent. It's not you on that piece of paper. That's all I'm going to say.
Now, I have a little letter here related to that. The U letter. I'll read it out to you and let's see if I can find it. Yeah, I've got it here. Come on, open for me. Yeah. It's Dear John Doe. You've always got to get the name of the judge or the name of the clerk of the court for this one. And you address them personally in their private and unlimited capacity. Therefore, they're liable for whatever actions they take from that point. So Dear John Doe, or Dear so-and-so acting judge, in your private and limited and unlimited capacity. We thank you for the paperwork, which we have received on this day, whatever date it is. After carefully examining the paperwork forwarded to us, and it says us, and I'll tell you why in a minute, by John Doe, we realize that this is a case of mistaken identity. The plaintiff has made a complaint against you, and the defendant is you. As we are not you or the defendant, would John Doe kindly forward his paperwork enclosed to you? We thank John Doe for his prompt attention in this matter. Because as I was addressed to you and write back, I'm not you, basically. That's what that says.
Yeah. So basically, you will send me that later, Tom. I'd like to read that again and actually study that wording. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I will, and I'll send you all the information around it. I have it in a bit of information with it as well.
Yeah. Ray, if you can read the 1919 Constitution and not see the British Accredited Registry, you must have a white walking stick and a Labrador. Well, no, I don't have a Labrador. Two Jack Russells. And,
Ray can memorize when someone reads out the proclamation or the 1919 Constitution, Ray can memorize that. He doesn't need to read it then after that, you see. Just like a song.
It is just like a song. I've been doing lots of learning lately, and that's one of my strong points. I can remember the words of things. the crack is now, though. We don't know what's going to happen. September, it's been kicked on down to the road. They did that thing about the man and the case in Drogheda. But the very important thing there that I noticed this morning, and I was sitting back watching this man doing his business, and I seen him being ignored until he raised his voice and says, is it the sovereign seal of Dáil Éireann you sit under?
And at that point, what the man said is, I remind the court that you sit underneath the sovereign seal of the sovereign Dáil Éireann courts.
That is correct. And I seen then, that is when they took the paperwork. They did not take the paperwork until that was said. And I did see it, but they couldn't wait to get him out the door then. So
except paperwork at that point.
But like, again, I have to make another remark that I did notice. The judge was talking, the Garda was, and the judge and the Garda were talking, and the man was talking over them, or the Garda and the man were talking, and the judge were talking over the man, one or the other. But at no time, yeah, if that was any other man or woman that was up there, I'm pretty sure that that somebody would say, shut up or you'll be held in contempt, right? But not a word was said. It was strange because he did that judge has a reputation for shouting at people that talk, you know?
Yeah.
So not a word was said. And it's interesting to see how it's going, you know, where it's going to go. They're going to have to produce that.
That could go on for years.
Well, they're going to have to produce that.
Yeah.
And it's getting to the point now. And as long as we keep reporting upon it, yeah?
Yeah.
People start to realise then, well, if they say they're legitimate, why haven't they got the licence? Yeah.
Well, again, look, I'm going to say it now. There's another very, very important twist to what's going on in that court case. Hopefully next week's show we're going to say exactly what that is, and it's something else that the man is saying in there that hasn't been exposed on the internet yet or on the radio. So there is more of a twist to the actual case itself, and next week I think we'll cover that on a different show and a bit more in depth, I think. Yeah.
Well, basically licensing means it's basically when the government takes away your inalienable or unalienable right to do something, and then either tries to sell it back to you or give you permission to use it. So when a license is involved, it's something that you should be entitled to anyway.
Yeah, it's just selling you back a right. That's all they're doing.
Selling you back a right taken away from you.
Well, absolutely. I think, most people get confused. A license is given, a legal valid bona fide license is given only when you're going to be productive and not harm anything of natural resources and natural aid.
Yeah.
And the questions are coming in thick and fast in that chat box now. Question from Laurie to Tom. Do you think anyone going into a court will jeopardize their situation? Put someone or something into a situation in which there is a danger of loss, harm, or failure?
It's a long question. What I think they mean is by their appearance in court, are they jeopardizing themselves? Not necessarily. When they go into court, in fact, there's two of them going into court. There's the fiction that has been created by their birth certificate, which is what the court recognizes, because the court has no power over any man or woman. The court has only power over the fiction. And they want you, when you go into court, to represent yourself as the fiction, which you cannot be. And if you do represent yourself as the fiction, then you are jeopardizing yourself. So you've got to stand up and say, I'm a man, commonly known as, representing that fiction, and now you've called their bluff.
Well, presenting, we always say presenting myself, because if you're representing, well, you're representing...
Yeah, yeah, presenting is better. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. And
I just say, I present me, the man here, I'm out. Stand in front of you.
Yeah, they don't like that, because they want you to pretend that you are the legal fiction, and then you have no rights whatsoever from that point onward.
Yeah.
So you're jeopardizing yourself by not identifying yourself as the man or woman.
Well, yes. Well, basically, look, I like the way Paul does it. I present the man here now today.
Yeah,
you know,
I present me, the man. You see, I present me, the man here now.
Yeah. And I like the way he does it. It's simple, and there is no holes in that, you know.
Well, I was going to actually, I don't know, what was it? Yeah, this is for Tom. Tom, you're explaining there about the bed set and stuff, yeah? And they're expecting you to go in there with the bed set and be that fiction and so forth, the National Insurance number and all that malarkey stuff that goes with it. Well, what would happen if a man went in there, or a woman, and went up and even before the court start, you lodge in your normal paperwork, I want this under the 1919 Constitution, as is my right, and I'll require a legal valid bona fide license and so forth. And what if I attached, what if a man or a woman attached a birth certificate from the Sovereign Republic of Era, with the Sovereign Seal and that, and then went into court and done the same thing, gave them a birth certificate with the Sovereign Seal?
Well, in Clonmel Court, when people did something similar to that in relation to TV licenses, when their name was called, the prosecutor or the state solicitor or whatever he was, stood up and say, you know, this case is not going forward, and it's thrown out, or whatever the word they use is. They just don't pursue it. End of story. Because they don't want that argument to be heard in court. They don't want the people to hear that argument. They don't want the people to know what is going on.
Yeah. Courts are a great place to get an education. Now, a lot of stuff that goes on in a court, you won't understand it. But if you sit there in court, you'll pick up things, and it's great to have a little pad. You'll pick up things and you'll go, wow, I didn't know that. And you write it down. You know what I mean? And you remember it. That's what courts are. So they don't want the public sitting in there getting educated when that argument comes up, Tom.
Well, Tom, you just hit on something there. And I think I agree with you 100% there. It's what we bring into the court. And certain things they don't want to bring into debate, because they can't give certain things recognition and stuff like that, and they don't want people to hear of it. So I can understand where they try to railroad the man in the 1919 Constitution, but again, as I said, there's a bit more to the detail than that, and we will talk about next week and stuff like that. But was it a better from the Sovereign Republic of Era that the man gave in that day?
Yes, yes, and in fact had a letter from the president of the IRB, Billy Maguire, as well, saying that he had a right to be heard under the 1919 Constitution. And the case struck out immediately, no words spoken, end of story.
So the facilities and everything is there, so for anyone that wants to deregister their birth from the provisional royal de facto corporated crown... By the Rockers government. I'm trying to give it its full title there.
Deception. You forgot deception.
Deception. I'm trying to give it its full title. It's some tongue twister these days. Well, you can take the same as deregister our bet safe from there, or just hang on, go over to, say, Sovereign Republic of Error, Sovereign Government, and get a new bet set under the Sovereign Republic of Error.
Yeah, I'm just going to say this to Derby has, if you accept the 1919 Constitution, you accept the Crown. You missed the point. You're missing the point, Derby. It's not the point of accepting any constitution. I don't need any constitution to stand in any court as a man. It's what that constitution means and what it means to the bar and what it means to the de facto provisional government. Why it's the only legal valid bona fide constitution. It's when the state was founded. You're missing the point there of why the constitution is being used. That's the bit you're missing, Derby, yeah?
Absolutely. And I could say, like, that. I've said it many times, and Derby knows the understanding and all that as well. I understand about sovereignty and what is a standard as a sovereign man and all that. But not everyone out there does. Some of us have been belting on about it a long time. People do not get the understanding of what it is to be standing your own sovereignty and stuff. A lot of people believe in the government and the structure of constitution and stuff like that. So why not get them back to the basis of what they know, or that gives them a bit more, gives them more freedom, takes them out of the legal realm of corporate rubbish that's going on at the moment. So do you understand government? Do you understand constitutions and stuff like that? Do you understand what lawful? So bring them back to that. Try and get them back to that point. If we can't get them back to single individual sovereign man and woman, try and bring them back to a point that our mind will allow them
to come back.
But for example, if you look at it like this, the rule of law is a mind construct. Basically, it's a fiction. Law was created by man and woman, if you like, and he or she must therefore be superior to that which he creates. The creator is always superior to that which they create. Now, everything you create, you rule over and have the right to rule over. This is your very own constitution. So the legal fiction is a fiction of law. And the law, therefore, is presented to us as though it is superior to us and we are subject to it and bound by it. That makes us slaves. The rule of law is basically a fiction created by man, and you as a man are superior to that. You've got to realize any time you go into a court, you're the superior in there. But if you present yourself as the legal fiction, that thing that's on the birth certificate, you have no rights whatsoever. They are superior to that. But they're not superior to the man. So when you stand up and say, I am the man, that puts you in the superior position. That's why that statement is vitally important. The most important statement anybody ever made in court is that statement.
Again, I know where Derby's going with the Constitution. Yeah, I know why he says it's under the Crown and stuff like that. I have looked. I'm not a heavy reader or a great understanding, but I do a bit of certain research of things that I do be into, and I have come across a lot of stuff about constitutions and how deep you go and all the way constitutions go back to the Knights Templars constitution, all the way back to the 1100s when they were given a false constitution to be an independent state and stuff like that. So I do go into some constitutions and stuff to see where the structure comes from and stuff. So, but the way I see it is, again, look at the 1919 constitution. It's a good, solid constitution. So it is. It gives the assets to the people of the state. The assets belong to the people.
And the 1937 constitution stole those assets from the people.
I was typing the answer there to Derby. Yeah. The courts recognise the 1919 constitution. Yes, they do. Right.
They have to.
They have to. Yeah. It's what the state was founded on. They use the sovereign seal in the courts. They use the 13-string harp with Éire underneath it. That is the sovereign seal of the sovereign public of Eire, right? It hangs in most of the courts. In some cases, you'll often see a copy of it, but just because there's a copy of it doesn't mean it's there, and it doesn't mean that you can't bring your own in with you, right? So the Dáil Éireann courts were established on the 21st of January 1919, along with Dáil Éireann, when it was called. So, like, I know where you're going from here, but, like, you're saying you're giving your power to a piece of paper, a state and things like that, but, like, I don't want to run the country for everybody else. So you try and pick whatever amount of lads that you want to do, and at least they have to answer to you, and you still have your sovereignty at the end of it. And if the idea that they come up with is good and it benefits all, well, then you might want to contribute a few bob to pay for that. That's what sovereignty is, and that's what the sovereign government would have been. It wouldn't have, it would have still had to produce infrastructure and everything like that, and that infrastructure would not have been free. You would still have to pay for it, but the infrastructure would have belonged to the people, and it would have been upkept for the good of all. That's how it's supposed to work. But they're claiming that they are Dáil Éireann, right? The provisional government is claiming that it is Dáil Éireann, and it's not. But it has the Dáil Éireann seal hanging in its courts. So in other,
it doesn't have it has the Dáil Éireann seal hanging in the court, and the Royal Oireachtas and the Royal Leinster House and all that. What they have is their own logo. It's a logo. It's a business registered logo that hangs up there. It's a half circle. Ring them up. Ask the question.
The other thing I was going to say there, I'll just finish off what I was saying about them courts there, right? The sovereign seal is hanging in the courts and it represents Irish law. So basically, the courts must be appointed by the sovereign president, and we know for a fact that none of the judges and none of the courts have been granted a license by Billy Maguire, and that they're operating in fraud in this country, and they're being called out. That's what's happening there. They're being called out. Yeah, it's been.
They can't give them a license because they have no authority to give them a license, so they just simply appoint them.
Yeah, and they still haven't got a license. They've got a permit. Perhaps they have a permit. I haven't seen one of them either. Maybe they have a permit. But I don't think they have anything. It's the British accredited registry courts that's operating here, the same as it is in the northern counties, and the same as it is on the UK mainland, the same as in Canada, America, South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, Jamaica, Malta, you name it, any country that's under
every
the Commonwealth
that's operating them courts. The British at some stage, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the Commonwealth was known as the White Empire.
The White Empire.
The British Empire is the White House, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the other empire is the Red House, and that's on the other side.
Oh. The ex-Commonwealth as well was known as when Collins was signing up for the treaty and all that. That's where it came into that, so it was all about the White Empire.
Yeah, and they referenced Canada in that as well.
They did. They referenced Canada, right?
So that's what we mean about. I probably read that thing maybe 2 or 3 years ago. So there, that's what Paul was saying about my memory. Like somebody mentioned that, I remember the document, and I remember they referenced Canada and it being a dominion, and that's what they were going to give to Ireland.
Yeah, that's exactly what they were going to give.
I read the other day.
Did you read it the other day?
Me?
No, I was reading out here last week on the show. It was a paragraph in Ireland in the 20th century. And basically, it was talking about the treaty that Michael Collins signed. That Michael Collins, before the treaty, was taking a loyalty note to the Crown. And it was all about the White Emperor and stuff like that. But further on in the book, it goes on then and it says, De Valera came back into constitutional politics, and he decided for his own reasons, known to him, to follow Collins's approach of the treaty, which means taking a note and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Then further on in the book, it'll say when De Valera became president and stuff, he broke his allegiance to Britain. Well, you see, nowhere when they took the oath, they took an oath of loyalty to the Crown.
Not to Britain, yeah.
Just after that.
they originally took an oath of allegiance to Britain as well, right? So they took two oaths originally in Sarsat and Harran,
So basically all he done was he broke the oath with Britain, and that just means with Parliament over there, so two individual parliaments. But he still had the loyalty
and to the crown,
Yeah, so nowhere does it ever state in any book that he broke their loyalty to the crown.
Well, in 1536, around about then, King Henry VIII of England proclaimed himself as King of Ireland forever. And that is never...
1542.
Okay, yeah, and that was never rescinded. And Barry Fitzgerald has a lot of information in that in Cork. He's worth interviewing one of the days.
He's a nice man, him.
He's an honourable gentleman. And he says that we're still, the Kingdom of Ireland is still under the British Crown. And it's still the Kingdom of Ireland. That was never rescinded.
No, wasn't.
And that's how they have control. For example, when we, at the whatever time of the year they do the budget now, they've shifted it about a bit. They announced the Exchequer returns. Now, we have no Exchequer in Ireland, so if they're returning money to the Exchequer, they must be returning it to London, where the Exchequer is.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you're right there. What they're doing is they're returning the Exchequer is being returned to London City, but it's returned to the Crown. They used to have to return it to English Parliament. Now they don't answer to English Parliament, they answer direct to the Crown, just like English Parliament.
Yeah, and they still call it Exchequer Returns, so they're hiding in plain sight.
Yeah.
Yeah, they sure are. And there's a good education here for a lot of people tonight, because Tom is quite knowledgeable about a lot of stuff of what is and what isn't about 1919. And Tom, you're an upstanding member, are you?
Of what?
Of the IRB.
Oh, yes, I am.
No. You are.
I'm vice chairman of the IRB.
You're the vice chairman of the IRB, and the IRB was founded in 1858.
That's right, and for the purpose of freeing Ireland from the British yoke. And the IRB will continue until that is established as reality.
Yeah, and here I just have the Crown Act of Ireland, and I'm just going to read it out here, actually. Just a short annex off the top of it, yeah? The Crown Act of Ireland, 1542, is an act of the Parliament of Ireland, which created the title of King of Ireland for King Henry VIII of England and his successors, who previously ruled the island as lords. It was Lord of Ireland that they were before that. The long title of the act was an act that the King of England, his heirs and successors be kings of Ireland. Among the 18th century patriot family, it was called the Act of Annexation. Yeah.
And it was never rescinded.
It's never been rescinded, and it still stands. That is exactly bang on to the spot. And so there you go, folks. I think in around that time, Henry declared himself King of Ireland, England, Ireland, England, Scotland, Wales, and France. So there's another one for you. France, remember France and England and the 100 Years' War and all that. So, like, there's a lot of secret agreements there too. I think I said the French people don't know that Henry is king.
No, and they also don't. The American people don't know that they're subject to the crown either. They drove out the English in 1776, but in the War of 1812, the British came in again and they burned down the White House. And they created a new treaty, giving them complete control. And they never tell us.
That treaty was signed in Paris.
That's correct.
Yeah.
There's a question in the box there. When they say the crown, do they say which crown, the royal crown or the triple crown?
Triple crown. The money goes to the triple crown.
Yeah, but like when they say, like, if Michael Collins in the books and they say taking a note to the of loyalty to the crown and stuff like that, and I came across, it just says the crown. It doesn't say the royal crown or the triple crown or anything. It's the crown.
Well, when it says the crown, it represents the triple crown, because the royal crown is that which is worn by the monarch of England. The crown is the city of London. And the monarch of England cannot go into the city of London without invitation. And the monarch of England, whether it be male or female, has to walk behind the Lord Mayor of London in subjection to the Lord Mayor of the city of London. In other words, the Lord Mayor of the city of London, when the monarch is there, is superior to the monarch of England.
Because the crown is...
So a little handy reading, a hint there now for anybody out there reading books on any of these sort of subject. When it mentions the crown, if it doesn't say royal crown, when it just says talk royalty to the crown, talks out to the crown done this, the crown done that, they're all about the crown corporated business structure.
Yeah.
Yeah. The crown is a corporation, actually.
That's it. Well, the crown is the corporation, and it's the corporation that owns everything.
Yeah. Now, there's an interesting little aside to that that an Englishman told me, and I can't verify it, but maybe you or some of your listeners might be able to. This Englishman said, why could they not give back the six counties? I said, what do you mean, could they not? He says, they couldn't give back the six counties because they don't own the six counties. I says, what do you mean? He said, King Henry VIII gave the six counties to the crown in return for money. Now, he was talking about the Crown Corporation. In return for money, which he never paid back, which he was unable to pay back. And from that point onward, that part of Ireland is controlled by the crown until Henry gives the money back, or his successors. So that six counties, they couldn't give back because they weren't able to pay back the crown.
Right, okay. I haven't heard that before.
I hadn't heard it before, and I haven't been able to verify it, but it's just something I'd like to throw out there and see if anybody can.
Look, they couldn't get... the man was very right.
Can I just cut in there a sec now? Because it's a question I asked many times, and I think I did ask Billy himself. It was brought to me a while ago as well, actually, by someone else. Up in Northern Ireland, it's the only country in the world with a number plate that doesn't have any initials after it.
Yeah. Hmm. That's actually
Should I say up in the north part of Ireland, not the northern,
the northern counties.
Northern counties.
Well, come to six counties, if you like.
Yeah, the six counties.
I'm not going to call it the northern counties.
Donegal people mightn't like that.
But the northern counties.
Yeah, they're more northern than any of the six counties.
Yeah, but you're down in northern county as well, you know? Mm-hmm. Basically, Paul was saying about the number plates, and you said that man said the crown couldn't get or they couldn't give it back because they didn't own it. That is correct. They don't own it. We own it. The Irish people own Éire. Yeah, the land belongs to the keepers of the land, and we've been keeping the land. They don't own anything. I put up a picture last night, and it was a picture taken from space of Éire. I didn't see. Now, it was a whole lot of Éire or Hibernia or whatever you want to do it. But I didn't see, not a cloud in the sky over it either. It was beautiful. And I didn't see any borders or walls or fences or anything up there around the northern counties anywhere. Didn't see any borders anywhere.
That's all a fiction. And they control it under the whole... first of all, they came into Ireland under a fiction, under this bull from the Pope. Pope Adrian IV, bull auditor.
A laudabiliter, yeah.
And he didn't own Ireland, so how could he give it to anybody?
Mm-hmm.
And didn't some people say that... Sorry?
Didn't stop them from claiming it, just the same.
Didn't stop them from claiming it. Then he told Henry to become king of Ireland, but he said they have a king. And then the Pope said, well, I'll make you Lord of Ireland over everything and everybody in Ireland. He had no authority to do that, and he's never rescinded that.
No.
Neither has his... descendants are the ones that came after him. So the Vatican is in dishonor over this because they have perpetrated a theft and a fraud.
Yeah, they've given dominion to somebody that they had no right to give it to. And it wasn't theirs to give, yeah?
Yeah, and they tried to give away something that wasn't theirs to give, and we've been fighting ever since over that.
Yeah, well, look at it. You see, the sovereignty comes from here, and they all know it. This is a great country, this era. And it goes, look, I keep going back and going back and going back. And I'm back at the Tua Dan now. And I tell you, it's fascinating, guys.
It is. They cannot delegitimize sovereignty.
No.
And they cannot.
Yeah. And look, it's coming up to 10 o'clock. I don't know, Whittle, do you have a quick check in the box here? Our Fairport is hosting us tonight, our great producer. He does it every week, and fair play to the Fair. He does a great job. Have we a song lined up there, Fair? I hope it's that one I gave you earlier. And we'll take a little break. And we'll be right back after... Oh, he didn't give me the thumbs up. We'll be right back after this, if you're ready to go there, Fairport. And you're very welcome to the Friday show again with myself, Paul Coddy.
And him, Ray Hall.
And Tom Ryan here.
And Tom Ryan. And we're trying to confuse this again this week. But I've been watching the chat box while you have been on your break, or while we've been on our break, getting our glasses of water and things like that, and I see Derby. And Derby, I'm just going to point out that the constitution that you're reading, if it doesn't say the sovereignty of the nation is inalienable, it is therefore not within the competence of any generation of the people to surrender that sovereignty which each generation holds in trust for the nation. The question of surrender of national independence may not be submitted to an electorate. Subject to that fundamental principle, it is hereby declared that all authority in Ireland, legislative, executive and judicial, and all powers of government are derived solely under God from the people of Ireland. Those powers are inherent in the people alone by virtue of their sovereignty. They must be exercised in accordance with the principles of liberty, equality and justice for all. Any legislation not in accordance with these principles is hereby declared to be null and void. That's the constitution we're talking about, and that's Article 1 of the 1919 constitution. And the first line says it all. The sovereignty of the nation is inalienable. So in other words, can never be taken away. It's there. It's gone. It's ours. Yeah. And it's ours forever. And that's why we use it.
That sums it up.
I'm not saying I see there you've read all the constitutions. There is not one that's not simply a crown deception. I disagree. That one allows the man to be the man, and businesses then, if they want to operate, would need a license. That's what that's all about. That's what that constitution is all about. And that's why that constitution has been used in courts. And that's the reason why, because we know that they couldn't have a license. And that's why it's been used, but it's a recognised constitution as the first. So we're going to leave that on that point there, and we're going to move on. And Tom, you do a lot of other work, don't you? And oh, maybe you want to tell us, sorry, Tom, you were talking about you were a member of the IRB before with the break there. You have a little group going down there in Tipperary. Maybe you want to fill us in a little bit about how that's going, and then we'll get into the total dynamic, mind dynamics.
Okay. That group is going now 3 years. We meet in Clonmel on the first Tuesday of every month. And it's grown up to the highest number we've had now is 40 people at the meeting. So it fluctuates between 20 and 40 from whether people can turn up or not. And it's growing and growing. And we use it as an educational thing to learn from each other about all the kind of stuff we're talking about now. And if people have problems about court situations, we tease it out among ourselves to find out what is the best kind of approach to use. And we help each other with letters to write to the powers that pretend to be. And we've got rid of a lot of small, petty things like television licenses and dog licenses and all those kind of things. And they're not able to stand them up in court anymore once we do what we're doing. So most of the people now have stopped paying television licenses. I mean, why would we pay a television license to support a station that's permanently lying to us? RTE is unbelievable.
Yeah, so, I don't watch it.
Pardon?
I can't say when the last time I watched it. Probably 5-6 years ago, I don't know, sometime then.
I don't watch it, but people do, you know.
I think the most important thing there is, Tom, I want to let you continue in a sec. People have an understanding of why they're not paying the license, though.
Yeah, they do. And
important part along the way, when someone chooses to do something of their own free will and all that, that they have an understanding of why, not because the next man is not paying this or the next woman is not paying that.
They do have that understanding, but virtually everybody we speak to has this anger towards RTE for the lies it's perpetrating. The way it treated the water people, for example, the lies about the numbers of people attending and everything that was attached to it. Even the advertisement, it's the law. that you have a TV license. It's not the law. It's an act of parliament. And an act of parliament, unless you've personally signed it, doesn't apply to you. So it's not the law. So every time they say that, they're actually telling a lie. And everything they do seems to lie.
It's the presumption of law. No, you see, it's the presumption of law.
They don't say that, though. They say it's the law, you know?
No, it's the presumption of law, and they presume that you have, that you accept it. That's the presumption, you see. But that brings us back to, you were talking about licenses there, and there was something there on my mind that I wanted to go back into. Licenses, yeah. That, back to that court. And that man is looking for a license, because I believe he has a license, does he?
Which man? No, sorry, I'm lost there.
Oh, sorry, that man that was there this morning, because we're talking about licenses, and or maybe we should feed that conversation in later.
Well, that man that was there this morning has a license, but the court that's trying to suggest otherwise doesn't have a license. So the whole thing is a charade. It's ridiculous.
I think that's where next week we're going to go into the license part and what really is going on in that court case in a bit more depth. And I think it's about time that people got a real understanding of what a legal valid bona fide license is and how to go forward with that. And we'll do more next week.
Yeah, because that is a solution down there for your group, is what I was thinking in there a few minutes ago. But like, again, it's not something that anybody can do unless they have an understanding of what they're doing, you know?
It's very dangerous with the court.
That's what we're going to say on that subject for the moment, and we're going to move on. And Paul, I know you want to get into total mind dynamics with Tom, because it's actually a fascinating subject.
Absolutely. Again, it's all back to one's body, and it's a great start for learning everything that we are learning. Most stuff we come on, we chat about the courts and Independence Day, the IRB and all that. So I know you had, when you come on there last time, Tom, for other stuff that I'd be interested in, very good health. And health all starts with oneself, having an understanding of the body, isn't it?
Yeah, you've got to understand the body and the mind. The body is a manifestation of the mind, if you like. And what is the mind? Well, science tells us that the mind is a little piece of grey matter inside our head. It's not. That's a processor. That's a brain. It's not the mind. The mind is like a cloud. It's out there. It's every place. And if you look out into the sky, as far as the furthest star you can see, the furthest twinkling star you can see, the very fact you can see that, it means your mind is expanding as far as that and beyond that. That's where your mind is. Your mind occupies the entire blooming universe. And when you get into the subconscious mind and the mind beyond that, you're connecting with all of the other minds in that universe. And that's why hypnosis is terribly powerful, incredibly powerful. And that's why connecting with your subconscious mind is very empowering. That's how geniuses like Nikola Tesla was able to create virtually everything that's electrical and of an engineering quality in the 20th century. He literally invented the 20th century, if you like, because he was able to connect with the greater mind. So the mind is not a piece of grey matter inside your head. The mind is everywhere. The grey matter processes the information from that mind and the information received to transmit it to that mind.
But that's all brain. I always say it's body and mind, and that we take information in. We can only get information in five ways. We either see it, hear it, taste it, touch it, or feel it.
Well, there is another way of getting information. It's the way Nikola Tesla didn't see, hear, feel it, taste, or touch it. He got that information direct from the consciousness, the superconsciousness of the universe, where all information is. The, what would we call them? The psychic type people are the people into this kind of realm. They call it the Akashic mind or the Akashic records. All that means is all information is out there for everybody all the time. And some people talk about the burning of the Library of Alexandria, which was a terrible thing. It burned all the great books of the time. And they say that's lost forever. It's not. Nothing is ever lost. Anything that's ever been in the mind of man can be recaptured by the mind of man because the information is out there somewhere. And if we're able to connect with that information, we can reconnect with that, you know, what it was.
Yeah. So it's just floating around out there, Tom, is what you're saying. Like,
it's floating around out there.
You have to know how to connect with it.
Think of it like this. What is God? And there's all these kind of concerns and things about what is God. Well, as far as I'm concerned, God is like a universal internet. And everything that is consciousness, everything that moves, everything that lives, in fact, everything that exists has some level of consciousness. And all of those consciousnesses are interconnected through that internet. And that entire internet, then you can call that God. And we're all part of that. So it's not some idiot sitting on a cloud playing a harp.
No, look at nobody can explain God, yeah?
Well, that's as good an explanation as we are capable of explaining, I would think, you know?
Yeah, nobody can explain what God is. Now, I have a question in the box there for you as well, Tom. Can you outline your background in psychology and NLP, etc.?
Well, I have a degree in psychology. I'm a trainer, a master practitioner and trainer of NLP, and I'm a master clinical hypnotherapist.
And I'm just going to be, I'm not tuned in. NLP is?
Neuro-linguistic programming. It's basically the type of language patterns that the mind understands in response to.
Right, okay. And I was hoping I'd get that Paul fella in there. I hear him in the background there, but it's quiet.
No, I was just listening to Tom there, so I was trying to absorb as much as possible.
Yeah, because you mesmerize us with the information you give us when you come on here, Tom. So, like, we're very happy to be listening and let you talk, you know?
we have the mind, body, and soul.
I think the soul is consciousness. And I think our awareness, our understanding, our feelings, they're all expressions of soul. They might not necessarily be the soul in completeness, but they're all expressions of it. So to me, that's what the soul is. And the soul is what animates us. And in fact, everything that animates comes from what we'll call the Godhead, if you like. Because everything... And then within us, we have a whole series of programs, and some of them are good and some of them are not good. Now, we have inherent programs that come to everybody when they're born, and we can call that, if you like, our unalienable rights are built into that. And we know them instinctively, right from wrong. We're presented with all kind of garbage later on, because the moment we go to school, we have to put our hand up and request permission to go to the toilet. That's an abomination. That's everybody's right to go to the toilet without permission from anybody. But they're starting to control us from that point onward. And then we get into a state of cognitive dissonance where we start to believe they're garbage.
What would your take be on what you're saying, memory? You say that we carry memory, yeah?
There's different kinds of memory. There's the stuff we've memorized. Then there's a kind of an inherent memory. And that could be from past lives, if we believe in past life regression. I've done it with many people. I've never found to fail a person that hasn't experienced past lives. And people can contradict it and do whatever they like. And the ones who contradict it, I invite them to come along and experience it. I don't do it, per se, because I don't consider it to be of any great value. If a person comes in to me with a problem in this life, they have a problem in this life. I don't care where it comes from. If they have a problem in this life, the solution to the problem is in this life. So I don't use a regressionist therapy because of that. But if people want to do it just for their own experiences, I have no problem whatsoever in doing that. One of the funniest ones I got was a lady, in fact, she works for one of the newspapers. They came to interview me about this thing. It was a Star newspaper. I can't remember her name now. And she went back to the 16th century in this particular lifetime, and she was a man. And she gave us all the kind of experiences she had in that kind of time. It was very interesting. When I take a person out of that life, I take them to a place between lives and I ask them, what's the lesson in that life for this life? And this male voice came out of her and said, tell her get a husband. She's 27 years of age. Why isn't she married? Basically, it was the kind of way of thinking that the man would have had in the 16th century. And it just sounded very funny in the 21st century. But that's the kind of way that this kind of regression thing works. It has certain values. I don't particularly attach any great value to it. But
water carrying memory, and as well, born within the womb, which is water, and water is the makeup of the body. So do we carry memory through that way?
We do, absolutely. No question about it. All water has memory. Unfortunately, this is why they contaminate water. This is why they put fluoride into water to try and kill the memory in the water. to try and make us feel kind of lost in a place of emptiness where we have no great memories, because the instinctive memories that would come from that water would make us more sovereign, more powerful, more self-sustaining, more aware of who we truly are. So they want to kill that off, and they do that by contaminating the water.
You see, I think people don't really have an understanding of all that is where when they're getting all these prescription tablets from the doctors and all that, as well as drinking fluoride and the food, that the stuff that they put into that is actually for contaminating the water within the body, drawing on the minerals and nutrients, contaminating the water so it loses memory, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It loses memory and puts false memory into it, and it puts fear and anxiety and pain and suffering and the memory of things like cancer, which will then attack the people.
You know, and then if one's breaking down the body in that sense, to go off and have a child, then the woman would be carrying that like a broken down memory water, and the child would carry that then and start breaking down further through the chain, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and it does that. And you'll see that each generation is less and less intelligent as we go forward now. This has been shown and proved quite exclusively and extensively in America. And if you look at the behavior of those people out protesting when Trump got in, and I'm not for Trump or against him, and I absolutely condemn what he did last night in Syria, but the kind of protests were absolutely silly. And the interviewers asked them what they were protesting about, and they didn't even know. Because what they were actually protesting about was what people told them to protest about, because they didn't have the ability to think for themselves. And this is sad, and we're all heading that way unless we stop this and stop drinking. I sank my own well. I won't drink that bloody water that comes from the public supplies, because I don't like that poison that's in it. I don't want to be poisoned. I don't want to be dumbed down. I don't want to be making an idiot of that, because it blocks the pineal gland that connects with the subconscious mind and universal consciousness, and you become a dumb animal like a cow at that point.
Well, that's what I was actually going to say to the next is, how would one go about, because what life does carry a memory, and they are trying to block the memory and stuff like that, but again, you can resurface that memory. So like, so how would one filter
that memory? Well, they got to start living a cleaner life. They got to start drinking the public supply of water. That means they've either got to find a well where there's the best possible water, or they got to buy water. Now, they got to be careful if they buy water. And we've had the waters tested. All these different ones have come in bottles with labels on them, and we got a very surprising result. Because two waters came out as clean, and all the rest of them were contaminated in one way or another. And the only two waters that came out as clean was Dunstore's own cheapest bottled water. And the other one was Carrigglen that comes from Lidl. And they're the only two truly clean waters. And they're the cheapest waters you can buy. And one of the lads said to the guy who was testing the water, he says, how comes that they're so superior to the others? He says, they're so cheap they can't afford to put poisonous chemicals in them.
So you buy your poison.
For the cannabis,
yeah,
so
you buy your poison. That's absolutely true. I mean, people are taking prescription drugs every day. You mentioned that there. But they never read the side effects. And if they did, they might or they might not take the drugs. I don't know whether they would or not. That's not my choice. That's their choice. But it behoves everybody to read what's in the prescription. And they don't. And the side effects are sometimes horrifying. And they come in with a whole lot of complaints and things like that. And I say, what are you on? They tell me. I said, have you read a small print? They say no. And I get this quite a lot from males who are suffering from erectile dysfunction. I says, if you read the small print on what you're taking, that's the cause of your erectile dysfunction. And they look at me as if I had two heads. I said, read the small print. I said, hang on a minute. I'll get it up for you on the computer. Read that. They say, oh, my God. Well, I said, why didn't you read the small bloody print?
You need
if the doctor prescribed it before, it's okay. So what they're doing is they're outsourcing their health, their very life itself, to a doctor. You don't outsource anything. That's not being sovereign. If you're sovereign, you don't outsource anything. It's part of you. You keep it as part of you. And you make your own decisions. And no matter how qualified a person is, whether it's me as a hypnotist or whether it's a doctor or anybody else, don't take my word. Don't take anybody's word for it. Check it out yourself.
Absolutely.
That's being sovereign. And if you don't check it out for yourself, you're not being sovereign. And if you outsource it, they outsource their lawful problems to a solicitor. He's not going to look after them. He's looking after himself. They outsource their health to a doctor. They outsource everything to somebody else. You know, and everything is outsourced now, and people are outsourcing their very lives itself. And that's absolute madness.
I often say it on here, we're not on here giving anybody a voice around. All we're doing on here is giving information that's out there. We're not a genius around. All this information's out there. We format it together and give our best explanation of it. All this information's out there for anybody to go check up on. You know, so it's not new. We're not exposing that or anything like that. The information's out there. There's no way Snowden's here or any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but it behoves each person to check out everything. And all I'm asking them to do is read the small print. Read the side effects of everything.
I wouldn't call them side effects.
Effects, really. Yeah, but I mean, they understand them as side effects, and I've got to talk the language that they kind of understand.
Yeah, I can understand that as well. But, I can understand that myself. I was diagnosed with ankylosis, spondylitis, in the back. But when I was, they were trying to put me onto tablets, and it was before I knew how to repair and start going into this life of learning that I am now. I noticed how the tablets did affect my body. I'd done a lot of training then, it was a couple of years ago. And it was actually the first time I even fainted in my life. And I had blood pressure for months, and I knew it was got to do with these tablets. So good luck to that, and I'd done a bit of checking up and all that. And then the next thing they were trying to get me onto was injections. And the first thing I spotted was rare cancer. And I turned around to your man and asked him, is he well in the head? Do you really think I'm going to start putting... My back's bad enough, and you think I'm going to start putting stuff into my body that can trigger off a rare cancer? Sure, if it's raised, I don't know what it is. You know, and that was before I knew anything about what cancer really is or my understanding of what I have today and all that. So you're bang on there about, like, definitely check the small print on what they say in the package. They're telling you straight.
They do every time. And being sovereign is checking out all of those things.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Well, again, look, we had Rob on there a couple of weeks ago and another man called Jack. And we were talking a lot about the foods and minerals and nutrients that one goes into, should bring into the body.
Yeah.
You know, again, the food that we put into our body affects everything else that you were explaining about the mind and all that. It helps with the energy within the body.
I mean, what you take in will affect your body in every way. And that goes in more than one way. What you take in through your mind affects your body. What you take in as food affects your body. And so many people are taking in garbage from TV and then eating garbage. So garbage in, garbage out. Simple as that.
Absolutely. And again, like he was talking about the fitness, he calls it the four horsemen, which is your B12, your D3, magnesium and zinc and stuff like that. But yesterday, for the last couple of weeks now, I'd have a nice green tea in the evening times. I'd put my own bits and pieces into it as well. I'd be out there in the garden and I'd be pulling the dandelions and everything else and throwing them into the green. And the garden's full of them there this last couple of weeks. You know, the only thing is I have to get the high ones, the ones the dogs don't piss on. There's that much usage in one's garden this time of the year, you know, that one can put their own green teas together, you know, from the nettles, green teas, and other plants that I don't even know the half of them yet. But yes, I have all intentions of learning as much as I can about them because I see the benefits in going out into your garden at this time of the year on medicine and food right in front of you.
The root of the dandelion is probably one of the most valuable herbs of all.
Yeah.
It can even cure cancer.
Yes, you'll have a thing
I was checking into that. Is it a coffee or a tea substitute as well? So it is,
yeah, and it's excellent.
Yeah, and then I was even checking in as far as the nettles, where from the root to the stalk to the leaves to the seeds. I was actually had a handful of seeds then with Rob there during the week. You know, like, this stuff is out there. And it's amazing what is in one's garden or what one can by growing wild garden, letting things happen naturally. You know, your medicine, it can be there.
I got a cut in there, and we went round Paul's garden this morning. Actually, we were looking for that plant with the morphine liquid in it. It's a type of lettuce, but it grows up. It's a long stalk, and then it has kind of a tissa or a dandelion flower on the top of it.
Yeah, with smaller little yellow flowers. That's right. I know the
yeah,
one.
Yeah, we were looking for that lad in Paul's garden, but we hadn't got it. But we came across, Paul had many different types of young nettles. He had nettle seeds. He had, you know, the non-stinging nettles that have the white flowers.
Yes,
he has
I
them.
Do.
They're very good. They're very good for you. They're very good for you as well. But currently the bees are living off the flowers, so I'm sure he'll wait till they're gone before he eats them. We went a little bit further into the garden, and you have the dock leaves, and then there's so much soothing, calming in them. They can be eaten in a salad, or you can make cabbage out of them, or you can just eat them, you know. And then we found, you know, the small peas, right? The wild peas that you...
They're beautiful, yeah.
They're beautiful, right? Well, the peas haven't grown yet in Paul's garden, but like that'll be another harvest for them when they grow. And it was just, as we were walking around, we were saying, well, you could eat that. And then just growing inside his gate, I know, because he's this massive big burdock thistle, just about, I suppose he's about a third of the way up. And the seeds off him will be beautiful when they grow up. And then when he seeds, then dig him up and eat the root.
Lovely. But there's absolutely... beautiful things out there, you know.
It is back to getting an understanding of what's happening around us and what is around us as well at the same time as the world grow natural fresh waters and stuff like that. You know, we need to realize what is around us and protect what's around us. Then again, and then on the other hand, we need to know what's happening around us as in within the system and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's vitally important. And we've got to take responsibility for doing that ourselves.
Absolutely.
Well, I can't wait for you to do it for me, or you can't wait for me to do it for you. Yeah? So the only way you're going to be sure it's done is do it for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Don't wait for anybody to do those things. Take responsibility. Do things yourself.
Like I'm a great talker, and but I have, as of late, my diet. Like, when I'm at first, like, I just ate junk food. And like over the last few years now, like I eat very little meat now, and I'm mostly into vegetables. You know, yeah. I'm still trying to get used to the coarse brown bread, but sure, we're getting there. You know.
Come here. I was going to bring this on to Tom, because we're in the last half hour. But again, I'm going to bring you back to the body and the mind and stuff like that. A great way, what one must do, a great way of clearing the body and mind to what it should be is the nearest word I can think of right now. At this time of the year, away from the electrics, the Wi-Fi, out into the sun, soil, and stuff like that, yeah?
Yeah.
What is it like? Learn more on that.
Like the way you would boil cabbage, boil fresh young nettles, and that has a phenomenal cleansing effect on the blood system of the body. And when you clean out the blood, you're cleaning out virtually everything, and the blood is a cleansing instrument of the body. And when it is doing that efficiently and effectively, it rejuvenates the body, and you'll feel fantastic. And when the body is rejuvenated, then the mind can work better through the brain, because the brain is part of the body. And if the body isn't working well, the brain can't work well. And if the brain can't work well, it can't communicate with the mind. And if you can't communicate with the mind, you go around like a bloody zombie.
And that's what they're all going around like.
It's vitally important to cleanse. The old people always cleansed the body in the springtime. Another way of cleansing the body is to eat rhubarb.
Yeah.
You know. And there's many ways. The dandelion will do it. The burdock will, the dock leaf will do it. And then later on, as you go on through the year, different things appear. For example, the leaves of the young hawthorn tree are very good for you. And that they make a beautiful salad, actually. And then later on into the autumn, you have the red berries. And if people have heart diseases or things like that, those red berries are better than any heart medication.
Or boil the berries off the haw tree and take the stones.
I just pull them off and eat them raw. And I've always done it because I like the taste of them.
Yeah, well, I've eaten them as well as a kid, I have to admit. But when I go back to now, like Tommy Cagabline Dish, August, when I was younger, yeah, there was a lot more fruit around, you know, and you don't see wild gooseberries anymore. You don't see prunes on the trees anymore. You don't see that stuff growing on the sides of the roads like it did in abundance, I suppose, when I was a kid 40 years ago.
Because they're going along with these bloody machines and they're cutting everything on the side of the roads and they're cutting down the birds' nests and everything and they're denuding the place and they're destroying them. A certain amount of wilderness is good. And in fact, this evening, Robert was showing me a very ancient crabapple tree. I haven't seen a crabapple tree in a long time. It was lovely to see one last year. Yeah, and I must get a slip from it to see if I can grow one.
Well, I had an experience with one last year. I was up the field with the dogs and I seen this lovely big red apple, right, down in a kind of hollow. And yes, I went down to get the lovely big red arrow or apple. And apple. I think I stood on a hornet's nest on the way down, right? And I ended up getting stung many, many, many times. And I was actually quite sick after.
Well, a hornet sting is not good, that's for sure. I was chased by, when I was about 7 or 8, I spotted this big spongy looking thing in a field. And I was heading up to where my father was saving hay. And I had a 2-pronged fork with me. And of course, being a kid and curious, I stuck the fork in this spongy thing. Well, a million hornets came out very angry. And I ran and they came after me and I kept running. And all I could do was I jumped into a stream. And I was completely submerged in the water, and that's the only way I could get away from the fucking hornets.
Well, I'm telling you,
here's the question for the 2 years now, then. He's got stung by hornets' nest.
Well, I didn't get stung by them because I fled.
His surroundings to take that thing away.
There probably was stuff in the surroundings, but the hornets left me at the gate. So. You know, they left me at the gate of the field, and I was happy to be getting away. Even the dogs were lying down crying where they stung the dogs.
Oh,
you know,
my God. They're very angry hornets.
Yeah, like they stung my wife. She happened to be with me. My young daughter got away, you know.
Well, when I remember earlier on, I was in San Antonio, and I was living in this apartment, and outside the door, the hornets built a nest. I didn't know it was a hornet's nest, so I wasn't afraid of it. I just saw these things buzzing around. And they never bothered me. But if other people came to the apartment, they attacked them. And I felt kind of sorry when these guys came along and poisoned them with some chemicals and gases out of the place and killed them all, because they never bothered me at all. I think they were used to me. They knew I was no threat to them, and they left me alone. And anybody else came in, they didn't know them, and they probably saw them as a threat.
Yeah, look, nature has its instincts and everything like that. And something that we're going to go back to the total mind body and things like that now. Yeah. And we'll just say, for argument's sake, Tom, I went to you and I says, Tom, I want there's something in my past. Yeah. I can't remember what it is. I don't know whether it's good or bad, but I want you to hypnotize me, bring me back there and leave me with that memory.
I could do that. I would do that, but I do it with an element of caution, because the first time I ever regressed a person, and this is the first time, this is about 30 years ago, and I was delighted I could do this thing, and I was working off a script. I don't work off scripts anymore, but back in the beginning, that's the only way I could do it. And I scripted this lady back now, and I blah, 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 and now you're going to go back to what we call an effect bridge system, back to wherever, to this thing. Next thing, she was screaming like murder. And I said, what's happening? My throat is being cut. I brought her out of that very quickly. So when I take a person back now, I always take them back to a safe place.
Because people come into you in a past life, say, and they want to say, I want to remember. I want to do they ever ask to keep the memories?
Oh, they do, and I always make sure that they can keep the memories, because it's nice that they can keep the memories. And in fact, some of the times I'll record the whole session for them, so they can take it, and I can record it straight onto a CD. I have an equipment for that, and they can take away the CD of their experience.
Right. Yes, some very interesting stuff. That's Tom Ryan, Total Mind Dynamics, folks. Though he is listening, that I would recommend it. Like hypnotherapy is a cure, is it not? For anxiety and many, many, many things that is affecting society today, and they're on all them tablets and drugs to calm them down.
Well, I don't cure anybody ever, but I do, inside of everybody, there's a cure for every ailment they have. And what I do is I trigger that off in various different ways. Take, for example, you have a computer and you'll have a whole lot of programs in the computer. And then one day you haven't your your firewall or whatever it is up, and the computer gets infected by viruses. Now the computer is going to go crazy all over the place because it's infected by viruses. So you take it into a computer IT guy, and he knows how to get rid of those viruses, and now your computer is perfect. Well, your computer was perfect all the time, but its perfection was being disrupted by the viruses. Now, a human being is the same in the sense that they will have fears, anxieties, phobias, panic attacks, inability to sleep and all that. I liken them to viruses in a computer, and I get rid of them in a similar kind of fashion. And when they're gone, the perfect person is perfectly normal. Because each person, with certain exceptions, of course, but each person was designed to be normal and to function effectively and normally without panic attacks, without anxieties, without these incessant fears, without the inability to sleep. All of those things are built into everybody naturally. But something comes along and disrupts them. And my job is to get rid of the disruption. And what I do is I program them to get rid of the disruption themselves. So I'm empowering them at that level of the mind as well. Because in a sense, I don't do anything. I direct them and know how to direct them to get rid of the problem.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff. It fascinates me. I used to remember when I was a kid. I used to say, "I wish I could hypnotize myself and get the lotto numbers, or you know, get the winning horses of the Grand National and things like that." Because I used to be an old gambler, you know. So
yeah, that's like one time when I was young. We got out the Ouija board, and it was in fact this day. I'd say about, I don't know how many years ago, but it was the day before the Grand National. Tomorrow is the Grand National, funny enough, at Aintree.
Is it? Yeah.
And we asked the question, can you tell us what horse will win the Grand National tomorrow? And the answer we got was yes. Now, we were very happy. We were going to make a load of money. And we said, can you please spell out what horse is going to win the Grand National tomorrow? And guess what it spelled out? First horse past the post.
Red Rum.
No, it spelled out first horse past the post. We weren't impressed. We weren't impressed at all.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say Red Rum, because that's Mother spelled backwards or something.
I know that, yeah.
He won the Grand National, I think, in 1973, 1974, and 1976.
Yeah, I think he's the only horse that won the Grand National three times.
Yeah. So, yeah, so a little bit of knowledge there about horses, people as well, but we're not here to get you hooked on gambling.
I haven't been able to find out who is going to win the Grand National for myself or for anybody else. So there's no point in anybody coming to me to find out who's going to win the Grand National tomorrow. Because if you come up with some kind of an answer like first horse past the post.
Yeah.
You know,
you're not able to predict the lotto numbers, just in case there's a rush there looking for them as well, Tom.
Don't worry, I tried that too. It didn't work.
It didn't work, yeah. So,
honest with you, it didn't work.
Yeah, so hypnotism is not prepared for that sort of personal gain.
No, it's not. There's a kind of a thing called the Prime Directive. It's similar to what they had in Star Trek. And the Prime Directive is you cannot use it for anything that's inappropriate. That's true hypnosis. If you use it for anything that's inappropriate, you're not practicing hypnosis anymore. You're practicing black magic. And I refuse to practice black magic because there's always a repercussion in that. It's going to come back and it's going to hit yourself. Anybody who is practicing black magic, you're fucking crazy because you're going to suffer. So stop it. Just get into learning about your mind and do the beautiful, magical things that are within you, that you can do wonderful, magical things without going into the place of blackness.
With positive energy, never doubt.
Yeah, exactly. Positive energy that does no harm to yourself or to anybody else.
Absolutely. And that's it. Like I do try to I often feel that I can feel my energy and I can feel it around me. And I know I'm in a good place when I can feel that. I can feel it now, actually. So I know I'm in a good place when I can feel that.
That's a beautiful feeling, isn't it?
Yeah. So yeah,
you're in touch with your subconscious mind when you can do that. And you can give yourself positive suggestions. Now, the problem is when people give themselves positive suggestions, or when they think they're giving themselves positive suggestions, they're actually giving themselves negative suggestions. For example, one man came in to me and said, I've been practicing self-hypnosis to stop smoking, and it's not working. And he says, I know I can do self-hypnosis, but it's not working. I said, what are you telling yourself? He said, I'm telling myself, you will not smoke anymore. You will not smoke anymore. You will not smoke anymore. I said, did you understand that the subconscious mind doesn't understand and doesn't compute anything negative. So what it was saying, what the message of subconscious mind is, you will smoke, you will smoke, you will smoke, you will smoke. Instead. So it's got to be phrased in a completely different way.
How would you phrase that? How would you phrase it?
How would I phrase it? I don't, because I can't get away around it. So what I do is I take out the program altogether.
Yeah.
So I don't have to do that, because you're creating a double negative no matter what way you go about it when you want them to not do something. For example, you're never going to tell somebody to lose weight. You tell them to become slim and healthy instead. So you know, and a lot of people are programmed
to become slim and healthy. Yeah.
Become slim and healthy instead of I will lose weight, I will lose weight.
I'm going to clear my lungs and be healthy.
Perfect.
Well, I'd say to someone, it's better to be healthier on the inside than the outside.
Well, you can't be very healthy in the outside unless you're healthy in the inside.
And a lot of people, I'd say lads that go to the gym and do heavy weightlifting and all that, they look healthy. To them, they look healthy, but a lot of them are using a lot of false products.
Steroids and things like that.
So they're not healthy on the inside whatsoever.
No, but you can nearly see it on the outside anyway, and they'll manifest it in some way on the outside. They'll manifest it through either having a bad temper or not being able to memorize things or having sleeping problems or being irritable. Or just begin to fall apart in some way or shape.
I think it's selfie syndrome these days.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that. There's an awful lot of that. And it's crazy stuff, you know.
And you read it from
a question here.
Phone.
Sorry?
Dodger has a question here.
Oh, sorry, Ray, go ahead.
What's wrong with smoking? Dodger wants to know.
It depends on what you're smoking. I know this German lady, for example, and she gets tobacco directly from someplace in the Amazon jungle. And it's pure, uncontaminated tobacco. And that will do no harm whatsoever. However, the tobacco that is in the cigarettes or the pipe tobacco or the cigar tobacco that's presented to people in the world, commercial tobacco, if you like, there's 4,500 chemicals, and most of them are carcinogenic. That's what's wrong with cigarettes. That's not what's wrong with tobacco. Tobacco in its pure form is no harm, but the crap that we're fed as tobacco is not quite tobacco anymore.
Absolutely. And a simple solution to that, again, is one can grow their own tobacco.
Yep, that's true. In fact, there used to be a tobacco farm in the 19th century in Tipperary.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not a hard thing to do in this country. Again, anything is possible.
It'll grow as easy as a dock leaf will grow. I don't grow it myself, but I've been told that.
I know. So again, someone might bring in the question, but you'd need a license. Well, come on, to ask that question on this show would be a bit naive. You would need a license. You have it. I gave it. Go do it. But yeah. Again, it's only a plant, so it's a seed, it's a plant, it's always been there. I'm not claim ownership unless you want to claim ownership of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, going back to that person said, what's wrong with tobacco? There's something interesting about tobacco. One of the most valuable vitamins we can take is vitamin B5. It's called niacin. Now, let's assume that's a coin, and we have a harp on one side and we have a head on the other side. And let's assume niacin is the harp. If we turn it over, it's still the same kind. The head at the other side of it is called niacinamide. And niacinamide is vitamin B5. It's niacin. But it's a negative side of the coin, and it seems to have a negative effect on the body to some extent. Wouldn't be terribly negative, but would be negative. So even good tobacco can be negative. But then there's really good tobacco that doesn't seem to be negative. It seems to have a positive effect on the human being. But the tobacco that we're sold has 4,500 chemicals. Check it out yourself. Google it tonight. You'll see what's in it. You'll be absolutely horrified.
And you won't stop smoking it because you're addicted to it.
You're addicted to some of the stuff that's in it. Nobody gets addicted to pure tobacco. They get addicted to all the garbage that's put into it. In fact, there was a famous court case in America against the biggest of the tobacco companies, Morris.
Morris, it was, yeah, it was Morris, yeah. Yeah.
And it was proven that they were putting addictive substance into it to make people continue to smoke. So yeah. there's more addictive substance into it than meets the eye.
Would I be wrong in saying then, I thought as well that addiction comes from a deficiency within the body. The body screaming out for something. So when we get tobacco, chocolates, wherever your addiction, maybe even drink, that's what we've replaced what our body is crying out for.
Yeah, yeah, we're trying to replace what our body's crying out for, but we're getting the wrong thing for it. But there's another side to it as well. Addiction, say, to serious drug addiction, serious drink addiction, it can be one other thing. It can be medicating the pain inside, some horrific pain from someplace in the past that keeps coming up. They don't quite know what it is, but that pain is constantly there until they anesthetize it with drink or drugs. And when you remove the pain, the addiction disappears.
But that's used as an anti-suppression.
Well, a lot of people do that.
Yeah, I know. I understand that. I walked around addiction for a while, so I did.
Oh, you know the score then? Yeah. So it's either a body deficiency or an effort to medicate a pain.
Yeah, well, even when I walked around addiction, I had my own point of view on things and that they didn't like. So when I came along and all the learning I'm doing now, I can understand why they didn't like my point of views.
Well, you were freeing people and they were controlling people.
Yeah, because I actually went along and done a regular acupuncture and stuff like that. And where they used it, they wouldn't use it within the centre that I was at the time. And there's no money for insurance and this, that, the other. I was walking at the time, found out it was £100 for insurance. I paid for the insurance.
It's very cheap insurance for that because it can do no harm.
Absolutely, you see. And that's why I was going to bring it on to. I found out the insurance was only €100. I paid at the time. What I done was took on the room within the centre, worked within certain addictions and all that and stuff. But any record I kept for myself, I didn't give to them then.
Uh-huh.
Because you see, I paid the insurance. And bang on what I was going to bring it in today. It was the cheapness. I found the cheapness of that. Some people would see that as a dangerous thing to be doing. But yeah, if you go to find out about these vaccinations that doctors give you and all that, not one of them are covered with insurance. Because they can't.
No, and in fact, they have a waiver that they can't be sued for giving you those things that they've got from the government. That's how much control they have over the government.
Did you use the opt-out contract where you accept full responsibility? So you do.
Well, people who come to me and say, I don't want to have my child vaccinated, what can I do? I said, go to the doctor and ask him to vaccinate your child. But ask him to sign this piece of paper I'm going to give you now. And this piece of paper says, I, Dr. So-and-so, take full responsibility for any side effects or any for anything other than what this vaccine is supposed to do. I also indemnify it against containing mercury or a whole lot of other different things down along. And no doctor would sign it. And the doctor will then refuse to vaccinate the child. And the parent is off the hook.
Absolutely. But that's a bit like the what we were saying about the opt-out contract before and the solution that we said.
Or a counter-offer.
That's a counter-offer. Got it right. You got it in one. Yes.
Absolutely. Counter-offer them with it and put the liability back in them.
Yeah. And they will not accept the liability.
Yeah. Again, it's like all solutions and information that we come across and give out, and I'm sure it's the same with your time when you said it earlier on, it's never a voice, it's solutions that we give out and stuff. And we also say, never refuse.
No, you don't have to refuse. You make a counter offer every time. Always stay in honor, and you make a counter offer, and you remain in honor, and they're either going to accept it or not accept it. And if they're in honor, and if it's okay, then it's okay to accept it. And if they don't accept the counteroffer, it means there's something hidden, there's something untoward, and there's something not quite right about it. And they asked me, how will I know whether a vaccine is okay or not? I says, ask the doctor to sign that, and he will sign that if the vaccine is okay. And if the vaccine is not okay, he won't sign it. And I've never seen a doctor to sign one of them yet.
No doctor will take responsibility for the liquid that he didn't make. I'm just gonna say here now, we have time to go over if you want to continue this conversation. But we just are on, just coming up on 11 o'clock. And Tom, are you okay to stay for a few minutes extra?
Yeah, I'm fine, no problem.
Fairport, we're good there, and we're not upsetting the next chapter's on the Upperman Report.
The Upperman Report is back on, I think it's 1 o'clock due to the time change again.
So we just have to check that out, Tom, because we wouldn't like to encroach on anybody else's time. It's a fascinating conversation, guys. Keep going.
Well, in other words, always stay in honour and never refuse an offer. Always make a counter-offer. And then everybody has the opportunity to stay in honour, and it takes away the possibility or the necessity of conflict.
I think that is the most important part there, that one does stand in honour and truth. You know? When you stand in honour and truth, when you stand in honour and truth, and that, and when you ask the questions in honour and truth, you see a big difference to the system then, don't you?
You do, and it takes away the fear that you may have that these people are going to try and control me, or these people are going to try and hoodwink me, or these people are going to try and whatever. And you take away the possibility of a whole lot of conflict. And when the conflict is taken out of it, there's nothing to be frightened about anymore.
Absolutely.
We're a race of people. I don't know where we got it, but we shouldn't have fear in us. Right, fear is not really. I know you have one of your senses would be like that will tell you when you shouldn't go towards something, but fear shouldn't be something that we should have in us. I don't think, but it is in us, and it's in a lot of people, and it's why we're able to be controlled. People have the fear.
Yeah, and it can be removed.
It can be removed. I don't have a lot of fear in me.
It's a program. And people are programmed to fear. It could start from their parents. It could start from school, but it's a program.
It is a program, yeah. And when you're taught to fear things when you're young, like we were taught to fear the priest, you know. Well, rightly so, you know. And we were also told to fear the guards, yeah.
Rightly so.
And fear any organizations that wanted to, when we got a bit bigger, my father says there'd be no organizations, and he was referring to provisional IRAs and INLAs and things like that, because there was a lot of that sort of activity around where I lived. And we always had
with the orphanage.
Sorry?
I bet you also got threatened with the orphanage.
Yeah, the orphanage, yeah. Yeah, the orphanage was, yeah, there was a lot of us. In all fairness, my mother actually didn't do it, but I remember the Gardaí picking me up one time, and that was for something bold, for breaking windows and things like that in the glass house, you know, it was inside throwing stones. But so that's where the saying comes from, don't throw stones in a glass house. But that's what the guard was telling. I was about 8 or 9 years of age that time, and they were threatening, it will take you away and put you in an orphanage.
And it's a terrible place in an orphanage. And they were saying that then. Now they're trying to say, oh, we didn't know the orphanage was a terrible places. They were,
They were giving you a great choice back then, weren't they? The orphanage, the guards, or the priests. I tell you, it would have been all the same with the other hands on you.
Oh, yeah. My God.
But it just goes to show that's the fear that was instilled as a child, and the other things and the emotion that they put non-belief, and then they wreck that non-belief when you become 9 or 10 years old, because they tell you, and we still do it today, and we're all guilty of it. Santa Claus.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know,
said to me today, she said, is it Santa Claus or is it Satan's Claus?
There's so much happening, so much even that happened, I think, behind us and all that. We can't, for the fear that was brought into us from school and our parents didn't know any difference, so they didn't. So is there a time within our lifetime to change things I don't know what way I'm trying to get this across. Like, we can't blame anybody, like our parents and that, for our past. That's for sure. Because our parents, they were nescients to everything, and through the spirit and through the force of, whether it be the gods and this, that, and the other. And somehow in my generation, that power that they had over some of the families and all that, they lost. Like, we didn't get threatened with the guards, the priests, or any of that kind of stuff in my family. We were lucky in that sort of sense. You know, so the next generation now coming up these days, when you threaten the youngsters, when you tell them, you can't threaten them with the police. You can't threaten them with the...
No, they're laughing at you to try it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So is it a time... is it a time that we can, what we're learning and what we're trying to get out there, is it that time of an opportunity to get it out there? It's a window in time we have.
Well, you see, it's already happening if you look at it. If you go back a generation, fear was being dumped into fear of the guards, fear of the teacher, fear of the any authority figure, the priest included. And now people aren't afraid of them anymore, except that they're still afraid of the law, of what passes for the law, and they're still afraid of what the government and the banks can do with them. I think in a generation, the next generation, they won't be afraid of them anymore. And when you stop fearing those people, they lose their power over you. Because the only power they have over a human being is the power of fear.
Well, I think that the people that's even losing the fear of them as well, there's a lot out there that's losing the fear. I think even with the younger generation, they're losing the fear, but not for the right reasons. They don't have an understanding of the fear that they're actually losing, if that makes sense.
It does make sense in the fact that they're not replacing it with sovereignty.
Yeah.
And they're just being kind of silly, if you like.
Yeah, so I would go along with that, yeah. Like, yeah. They're doing, in some cases, they're doing the right thing, yeah, but they don't know why they're doing the right thing.
Yeah, they're not doing it for the right reasons. And in fact, they only do a certain amount of the right thing, because if the reasoning and the thinking behind it isn't right, it's not going to turn out right anyway.
No. The young people, though, today, and in all fairness, I was surprised today as well. Like, I've been learning BMA, Fogram, Nalana, Gamal. I've been learning Irish slowly, and there was kids going by the gate today, and I was standing out in the sun. And and one of them says to me, hello, and I said, Dia Ditch, back to him. And then he called me a name because he didn't know what I said to him, right?
He thought you were calling him a name, probably. Well, that shows...
Right, but then three more of them came along, right, and they're the same age as my daughter. And and they says, where's Kirsty? And I says, she was after going to the shop, and I says, who is Shaker Dian Shoppa, right? Yeah. And your man looks at me as if I've got 10 heads. And he says, what? I says, who is Shaker Dian Shoppa? And then there was another fella standing back, and he was just watching, and he says, what? And I says, who is Shaker Dian Shoppa? And the other fella, actually, it looked like he well understood what I said. He says, she went to the shop, you eat it.
So how come only he understood it? Where were the rest of them? What's passing for education? Let me give you an example. We were talking about the mind there. Way back in the 1970s, the man has passed away now. He's Professor Lazanov. He was at the University of Sofia in Bulgaria, and he was able to teach 1,000 new words per day in a new language with a 97% retention rate. In fact, he could teach an entire language with complete fluency in less than a week. And we can't teach Irish in a bloody lifetime. So we're not teaching it right, and I think that's quite deliberate.
Oh, it is, yeah. It's very deliberate, and it's deliberately made hard, right? I'm doing a course myself at the minute on the computer called Duolingo, yeah? And you can learn many different languages, and that's where I'm learning to speak Irish from, yeah?
Very nice, yeah.
Yeah, so I am learning, and I'm enjoying learning, but the learning is slow, you know, because I've nobody to interact with.
Yeah, and if you had somebody to interact with, it'd actually be fantastic, and that's one of the great problems. And you see, they're teaching Irish as a dead language, the way they taught Latin, which was a dead language. And they've adapted the same teaching methods, and that's why what they're doing doesn't work. That's the first reason. The second reason is there's a Donegal dialect, there's a Connacht dialect, Connemara dialect, if you like, there's a Munster dialect, and there's a Ring dialect. And they're quite different from each other. For example, you take the Munster dialect and the Connemara dialect, and they're as different from each other as Polish is from Russian. They're actually different languages.
Yeah, because they're all Gaelic and they're back into the Celtic language. But that was deliberate as well, to split the languages, to split the people, to herd them in. Because at one stage here in Ireland, there was probably 40 different versions of Irish spoken here.
In the 17th to 18th century, there was a standard Irish, and I think the documents of that are still there, and they could have used that if they wanted to. But our friend De Valera decided no. That it had to be taught in these different dialects. And I think that was a deliberate destruction attempt of the language.
That was converting words into contract words then, so it was.
Yeah, exactly. And the true Irish doesn't have contract words in it.
Well, again, it goes back to the old thing, divide the people, divide the language as well, divide the language and they never speak as one.
Yeah. They don't speak with the same tongue. I wonder if all the people stood in O'Connell Street, well, they wouldn't fit, or around in the O'Connell Street area, and they said in Irish for them to leave, would they leave? Yeah, you know what I mean? Would they get out?
Would they know what was being said to them? Yeah.
Yeah, well, the provisional government would well know what's been said to them. But basically, if you don't have I'm beginning to believe if you don't have your language, you don't have anything. And that's what's been lost. All the heritage has been lost in this country. And I know I'm not making a huge contribution with it, but maybe I can pass on the language if I can learn enough of it.
That would be fantastic. In fact, the language affects the language you speak and how you speak and the meaning you speak it with affects your DNA. I mean, doctors, for example, are telling people every day, and I get really sick in the night by this, oh, that's because, oh, you have a DNA problem. They don't have a DNA problem. Diseases aren't built into the DNA. The DNA isn't a time bomb designed to kill you. The DNA responds to your mind, and the DNA creates its structure from the mind, and the mind responds to how you think. And if people are thinking terribly negative all the time, they'll create diseases. And if they're thinking very positive all the time, they'll eat well, as well as everything else, and they'll avoid diseases.
Oh, yeah.
My language works on vibration, so it does.
It does, so absolutely. Yeah.
Speaking words of untrue and bad language and stuff like that, you're speaking negativity, which is bad, which is a different vibration to what your body's at, and that breaks your body down as well.
It does, causes havoc, absolutely.
Yeah. That's basically it. And I know that we're at an old age to be learning new things, but you can't be just regurgitating the old stuff, you know?
No, it's lovely to learn new things. Now, you know something that's interesting that's going on here tonight between us all? If you turn on any program where there's three or more people talking to each other on TV or on radio, they're arguing, they're fighting with each other, they're in conflict with each other, and one has one view, another has another view, and there's three egos battling about each other. We're quite different, have you noticed? We're in agreement because we're sovereign. And when sovereign people are sovereign together, there's very little for them to disagree about.
I would agree with that statement, yeah. Because I'm not here to argue with your point of view. I'm here to hear it, you know. And I'm not saying everybody is right, but everybody has good merits in their opinions, you know. And if you want to, you can get a really great opinion if you listen to six or seven different opinions on a subject, as long as they're not negative and they're constructive, and you can probably take one really great understanding from all of them opinions put together.
But if you listen to those guys on the telly, they expect us to listen to them. But have you noticed they don't listen to each other? They're so busy trying to get their point of view across to beat down the other guy. It's a kind of a ridiculous thing. And I always, it's like a bunch of monkeys chattering, and no monkeys listen to any other monkey. So when I see all these people, the politicians in particular, debating on television, I say, turn them off, they're monkeys.
Yeah, well, that's what they are.
Yeah.
They never say anything. You ask a politician anything, he'll never answer yes anyway, Joe. That's the one thing he'll never say. He'll never say yes, and he'll never say no. right? He'll always give you some other answer. But the other thing is, they never talk about anything that directly affects me. That's not
Well, they're parasites. They're there to collect money off you. That's their whole purpose.
Well, they don't get a lot off me, to be fair.
Besides the point, they're there for the purpose of collecting money in the story, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they gave themselves a rise last week, didn't they?
Well, yes, I read that somewhere. Look at, sure, look at.
And they want to take one third of the wages away from the bus driver, but they give themselves a rise. So they're not leading by example. They're leading by dictating.
They're attempting to privatize the bus service. That's what they're doing.
That's the whole idea.
But the whole idea here is to get the public to hate the bus driver. Right? Yeah. So they want the public to hate the bus driver, and then they get the public to cry. And I already seen it from Kieran Bolger of Fianna Fáil. He's the Fianna Fáil representative in Brussels. The morning that Dublin Bus were on strike, and the morning that the CIE obviously were on strike, he was on Facebook saying that calls were coming in, that people were crying for them to privatize the bus service. Yeah, and then
he's saying it up front. Yeah.
Yeah, but he's putting this suggestion out there. Yeah?
Yeah, and he wants people to use that as their mantra. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, he's not a politician, but he's part of politics.
He's part of the political machine. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's basically what you got. And they think that we don't understand. They're running the health center, the health service into the ground right now. They are running that into the ground. There's plenty of money to hire nurses. There's plenty of money to get hospitals. There's plenty of hospitals lying idle. There's plenty of beds. There's plenty of doctors throughout the world. They are deliberately running the health service into the ground so that they can privatize it. Yeah, well,
they want to privatize everything. I mean, basically, they're using the old Thatcherite way of operating. And that's privatize everything and then collect taxes from everything you've privatized. So now you have no responsibility. Or your only operation is to collect money, collect revenue from them.
Yeah, that's it. You're only there now to take a bit. You're selling them a business and you're taking 50% of the revenue. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And they're happy to do that. It's called delegation, you know? And it's gone phenomenal in the UK now. They're privatizing. Absolutely.
And they're handing it over to these international corporations. I call that corporate feudalism.
And something that's coming here to Ireland, and Rob and Fairport and Pat Veldon were some of the ones that spoke about many years ago on this radio station is, there is a serious amount of children in the UK being taken by social services for little or no reason.
It's happening here too.
I know it is.
They can now put those children into places and conditions where they can indoctrinate them to be the kind of clones that they want them for the future.
There you got it in one, yeah. And basically, I read a story during the week there where a 10-year-old girl was taken from her father and her mother, right? And she had never been abused and she was put into foster care, but she was abused the second night, you know? So what's wrong there?
The system is exposing the child to abuse.
Yeah, and they're supposed to be looking after the child.
Yeah, it's pretty horrific.
Look, and it's sad. It's sad. But that, in all fairness, folks, that is what's going on. They need control of the children. They need to be able to control the children's minds. Don't worry about us, guys. I'll be dead in 20 years, you know, or that's what they'll be hoping. So, you know, they know they don't have to wait too long to get rid of me. But, if I was infecting the young now that are coming up, we say 10, 12, 15, 20, and I'm giving them my mindset, well, then that's not good.
No, they don't want that because you're teaching them to be sovereign, to be free. They want to teach them to be slaves and clones. And they also want them to be obedient above all else.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, to do as you're told.
And not have any discernment, to not be able to notice that they're being conned.
Yeah. And sorry, I was just reading there something that Laurie put in. All district councils, Ray, have over 100 targets per year to be into council's hands, yeah? So they have to collect 100 children each year, and there's many, many...
Is that in the UK or in Ireland? I think that's UK information.
It's UK, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're tasked with going out and collecting 100 bounties, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's what the child becomes. It becomes a bounty. The actual difference in this country is that, say, you were on social welfare and you have two children. Yeah, you would get, I think, about, per child, you get about 30 euros per week or 40 euros per week per child, yeah, for the upkeep of that child. Whereas when that child is taken into social care, right, their bond is accessed, right, and it's 1,500 euros a month is what's taken out of the bond to look after that child and paid to a foster parent.
So they want the parent to take it from the parent for the sake of money that they can make.
Yeah, well, you see, if they're taking 1,500 quid out of it, like, they're getting a cut out of this as well. Like, they have 15% of all social welfare goes straight to the social welfare office. So, like, if your payment, we'll just say, is 100 euros, well, they got 15 euro, you know, on top.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, there'll be administration fees and things like that, yeah.
Yeah, they create a whole industry around it.
Basically, what you have is the bond is your equity that's running through your life, but these are the companies that have inserted themselves along the way to handle your bond and look after your bond, and they're allocating you a fee through the children's allowance up until you're 18 years of age, and then when you're 18 years of age, you go on to social welfare. But, like, you should still be able to access that, because that is your equity, yeah? That is the bond that was paid for at birth, you know? That's what it is.
And that's worth a lot of money.
And that's what your pension is as well, right? Yeah. So let's not make any mistake. You should be able to access that all the way through your life. But these companies come in and they put rules and regulations in place and say, well, you signed over the control of this to us, and to access this, you have to do this and you have to qualify for that. And they're just putting themselves in to administer that equity that is yours. And you need to know.
They're third-party interlopers, basically.
Well, yeah, and there's many of them, yeah?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the whole civil service is rotten with it, and so is the whole government.
Yeah. So, like, that's basically what the system is, you know, and that's why it's called the British Accredited Registry System, right? Because it's a registry, and that's how people become persons, and it's they never bring a man into the court, they always bring a person.
Well, they can't control the man. They can they own the person. They have ownership of the person as opposed to owning the person.
And they indoctrinate people to think that they are persons.
Absolutely.
It's embedded in the language.
Yeah, deeply.
Yeah. Great. So how are you feeling? I don't know, Paul. How are you feeling? Is there any more you want to get in there?
No. I think we need it for now.
Yeah. We've had a great chat on there, folks, with us tonight. Tom Ryan has been a fantastic guest, as always, and we look forward to having him back on here again when we can. And, Paulie, have you anything to add?
No, I was going to say the same thing there. It's always great having Tom up on as a guest. It was even better meeting the man and all that. He's full of character, anyway, so he is. Over the summer, anyway, so we will.
Yeah, it's the real McCoy anything. And Tom, you have a website and stuff like that. Do you want to give it an old plug while you're here?
Yeah, the website is www.totalminddynamics.com. Totalminddynamics.com. And everybody's welcome to that. And if they want to call me direct, the number is on that.
Yeah. And the meetups is once a month?
Yeah, in Clonmel.
What, on the first Tuesday of every month in
Clonmel? Tuesday of every month in Clonmel, in that place we were in.
Yeah, I don't remember where that was. I'm sure you know the address.
But, I don't, actually. I know how to get there now. And the first three times I was going there, I got lost. It was crazy.
Yeah, so that is the story, folks. It's been a fantastic show. We look forward to speaking with you again next week. God, I think next week is Easter, so you never know who we'd have on Easter. Like, it'd be
I was going to say, Ray, next week, if we're not too busy, we'll try and get Billy McGuire on. If we can get Billy on next Friday, or someone that wants to stand in for Billy, Ray, you can run the show next Friday. And if we can get Billy on, we'll have Billy on. And two men that hold sovereign, did he hold a license to operate in the Sovereign Republic of Era?
That's a wonderful idea.
Hopefully we'll have a good explanation on what is a license, a legal valid bona fide license. I'm sure the two men that would be on can explain what our legal valid bona fide license is and so forth.
Yeah, and that should be a fantastic show with the Sovereign President as well, Eric de Ron Lehairlin, you know?
And in fact, having him on for Easter is particularly appropriate because it was the IRB who really organized the 1916 Rising, which was at Easter. So that would be very nice to have Billy on for that. And he's wonderful.
Absolutely. So then we'll have Billy on then, and we'll explain the Easter Rising, the importance of it. And that'll lead into the legal valid bona fide license. It's two men that has them, and one of them is using them in the courts at the moment.
Right. And with that bombshell, it's a good night from him.
A good night from me.
And see you all at the same time again next week. Good night.
Good night.